During the first year I learned to meditate, my Buddhist teachers took our class to graveyard so we would viscerally understand that we would end up exactly like the people in the ground, dead, very dead. After those excursions, I'd wake up every day and ask myself what I would regret not doing if I died that day, that week, that year. The answers were always the same. Figure out the meaning of life, if there was one, and find out why I was here. And write, always write. Making more than enough money wasn't ever part of the mix. Eventually, after a few years of teaching groups about compulsive eating and having my book proposal rejected by 25 publishers, an editor at Bob's Merrill accepted my first book. I spent the next 10 years teaching workshops and writing more books, doing well enough financially to rent an apartment, drive a used Volvo, and buy as much chocolate as I wanted. In 1992, my fourth book sold enough copies in paperback to spend 2 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. And when I received the check for this windfall, $106,000, it was like getting a paper bag filled with Monopoly money. I had no idea what to do with it. No way of relating to the fact that I was now one of the ones with money that I didn't like, didn't trust. Or as James Grant, editor of Grant's Interest Rate Observer, says, "Insofar as there is a lesson in history, it's that human beings are not good with large sums of money, anything over $136. Up to that moment, I had the luxury of not paying much attention to money, partly because I was making enough to pay my bills, after which I'd put what was left over in a savings account, and partly because I had met and married my partner, Matt, and I relegated the money part of our lives to him. He made more money than I, enough to put a down payment on a small house in Berkeley, and I assumed that people who could afford to buy a house knew what they were doing in the financial arena. Not only did I feel money dumb, but I also felt that focusing on money, either on ways to make more of it or on how and where to invest it, was complicated, shallow, and spiritually bankrupt. Although I wasn't aware of this until recently, I didn't believe that it was possible to be interested in consciousness and interested in money, to care about deforestation and care about money. I believed that any kind of awakening from what my teachers called samsara, or the delusion of conditioned reality, needed to be separate from money, as if money were as deadly as the plague, and even thinking about it would lead me to being one of the bad guys. So I kept making choices based on my unconscious beliefs. And since those beliefs lumped being an aspirant of the contemplative life with remaining ignorant about money, I chose ignorance again and again. Since I couldn't admit that I was making money and was therefore like all the moneyed people who I was convinced had no integrity, I just stopped thinking about it. And I stopped taking any responsibility for having it or deciding what to do about it. When our sweet and very rich friend Richard told us about a man named Bernie Madoff, with whom he and his family had been successfully invested for many years, we both assumed that Richard was brilliant, otherwise how had he gotten so rich, and that investing with Madoff through Richard's family fund was simple, smart, and safe. So within a few years, we turned all our money, nearly $1 million, over to Madoff. By giving someone else full responsibility for my money, my untarnished self-image could remain intact. I didn't have to think about money or what to do with it. I had Richard, and Richard had Madoff.